Well, good morning, everybody. It's great to be here. I think Buckingham is becoming my home from home. This is my third time in Buckingham this week, in fact, since Thursday. So it's great to be back, and thank you for inviting me. Will mentioned already that I live in Oxford with my husband and two children, Abby and Ethan, who are over there playing in the corner, and hopefully will be happy. I wanted to start by sharing a bit about my story about how I became a Christian. I became a Christian at the age of 21, having been brought up in a neutral home, and I was in the middle of a science degree. And part of the process involved me going to this course called sort of Christian Basics. It was before Alpha even got going, so that's kind of revealing my age a little bit. But I have vivid memories of giving this poor associate minister a complete grilling on all sorts of issues like, well, can you be a scientist and a Christian at the same time? If I'm sat in lectures teaching me about evolution, do I need to forget all of that when I become a Christian? Do I need to just drop it all and change the way I think? Or are all world religions saying the same thing? And if God exists, why is there so much suffering in the world? I had all sorts of questions. And so there were sort of two things going on in my life at that point. I was curious about Jesus Christ, but at the same time, in order to take him seriously, I had many questions that needed dealing with before I could see him clearly in order to follow him. And these two things were going on in my life at the same time. And so really a crucial part of my journey was to have these questions answered. It's like there were roadblocks along the way that needed clearing in order for me to walk along the road of following Jesus. And really that's what apologetics is. That's what basically what it is answering these difficult questions surrounding faith, surrounding Christianity that people have, in order that they can kind of see Jesus more clearly as a result. And the verse that was read for us said, but in your heart set apart Christ as Lord, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you for the reason, for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect. The word answer is the Greek word for that is apologia, and it simply means a reasoned defense. So rather than it being us apologizing for what we believe in, it's us giving reasons why Christianity makes sense, why we believe what we believe. Why do we need it? Why do we even need to answer these difficult questions? Well, because like myself at that point, many people misunderstand what God is actually like. For whatever reason, they have images of God that are not what he's actually like. And so it's almost like we need to help people come to a right understanding of what God is like. Before people are even willing to consider God, they want to know, well, is he trustworthy? Is he good? What is he actually like? What sort of things do people misunderstand? And most of them are about his nature, the nature of God. For example, the question all too close to our hearts at the moment, how could a good God allow so much suffering? Behind that question is the other question. If God were good, he would allow us to live in a world without suffering, wouldn't he? And therefore, given that we have suffering, God must either not be good, or he must be kind of lazy and indifferent. Or he might be the one causing the suffering, like a big kind of lightning bolt into people's lives. Another one is, I am a good person, and I've lived a good life. Surely I deserve to go to heaven as well. A really interesting question. And perhaps deep inside of this question is an assumption that God is someone who delights in excluding people and slamming the door in people's faces, say, sorry, not you. That maybe God has favourites, sort of certain people he wants in and other people he doesn't. there's sort of questions about what God is really like that lie behind these other questions. The other one is, surely all religions are saying the same thing. Have you heard that? Have you been asked that by people? Deep within this question is the thought that a God that claims he is the way, I mean, nobody does that without being arrogant, really, or egotistical. And so people are questioning when Christians say, actually, we have something unique, or the God of Christianity is unique, that somehow suggests that we're arrogant or saying that we've got sort of one-upmanship over other people. And so part of what apologetics is a need to correct misunderstandings about what God is actually like. Because if people are going to accept or reject God, we'd rather they did it on a true representation of what God is like. And never has this need to answer questions been more crucial than in the aftermath of this devastating earthquake and then tsunami in Japan. Why would God allow such a thing like that to happen? No doubt we've all been watching the pictures of just absolute devastation. And it can't be explained away by simply saying, well, it's people doing bad things to other people. This is different, isn't it? It's different to a man going into a school and shooting everyone. It seems to be like from God himself. How do we make sense of this? And apologetics, this answering difficult questions, does start with gentleness and respect, being willing to accept that we do not have all of the answers on this. We don't have all of the answers. However, is there nothing that can be said? I wanted to highlight a few things that might help us as we engage in conversations with people over the next few days and weeks. Firstly, if we could just change our perspective on the tsunami for a minute and look at our planet as a whole, and you will find that Christians differ in their perspective on this. You will find differing opinions throughout the church. But one point that could be made is that cataclysmic events actually help sustain the planet and create great natural beauty. If we can just put aside for one moment, and we will come back to that, human suffering, and look at the events themselves, then geographers and oceanographers would say that tectonic plate movement is a means by which nutrients are brought from the bed back to the surface of the earth. And it sort of recycles it, and it makes our habitat self-sustaining. And there's quite an amazing thing that perhaps we miss in our daily life, that there's something amazingly self-sustaining. Hawaii, much of its great natural beauty comes from volcanic activity. The Alps are caused by tectonic plates riding up against each other over a massive period of time. And so this is not straightforward, because these events seem to have contributed to much of the amazing natural beauty on our planet, and they sustain it. You often find people living at the foot of volcanoes because the soil is incredibly fertile. The nutrients that are thrown out in volcanic lava make the soil incredibly fertile, and people want to live there. And there's this huge kind of tension between, this is obviously a dangerous place, but it's a hugely fertile place as well. So some Christians would say this is a natural thing that happens in order for our planet to sustain itself and release pressure from the core. Secondly, you will find the view that these things happen because there is something has fundamentally gone wrong with the natural world. And this can be traced right back to the beginning, the earliest humans, when they were given a choice. Are you going to follow God, or are you going to go your way, live your own life, do it your way? And the choice was, I'm going to do it my way. Not only did that bring about a kind of a corruption of human nature, which we see generally translated to every human being, but it also brought about a corruption of the natural world, which we see translated to every human being. And so you will, Christians, the Bible describes nature as kind of groaning in Romans chapter 8, verse 20, being frustrated and in bondage. It's not as it should be. It's creating these kind of cataclysmic events that bring great suffering. So there's something fundamentally corrupted in the natural world, and that's why we see these things. But what I want to say is that either way, whether this is a general mechanism to sustain the planet or whether it is a corruption of the whole of the natural world that just applies to everyone, what is clear? Two things are clear. Firstly, it is not a personal punishment against individuals. When you are caught up in an event such as this, it is not God striking a lightning bolt to you and saying, "I am punishing you." It is a general consequence of being in a world that is corrupted because of our human decision to run our own life and go our own way. It is not a personal punishment. Secondly, God cares. God cares. God is the giver of human dignity, and therefore he is the one who wants to uphold it and rebuild it and restore it and bring comfort to those who are suffering. Whether you are suffering surrounded by thousands of other people that are suffering, there was a talk of a village of 20,000 people yesterday, that 10,000 have been wiped out by this tsunami. Can you imagine that? Whether you are suffering and surrounded by thousands of other people suffering, or whether you are alone in your house and you think that nobody understands and nobody cares, God cares. Whether there are thousands or just one. And he wants to bring comfort to those who are mourning. He wants to help people restore their lives. And therefore, Christians should be at the forefront of aid agency movements and efforts to restore, to retrieve, to comfort, to rebuild. So two things are clear. It is not a personal punishment. And secondly, God cares very much. What it does do is raise the question that if faced with imminent destruction, they had 5 minutes between the earthquake and the tsunami, what would be going through their heads? What would be going through your head? What would be going through the head of your friends if we knew we were faced with imminent destruction? Who would we be crying out to? What would be our final thoughts? Would we be secure in the knowledge, not that eternal life was about to begin, but that it began the moment that we accepted Christ, however long ago it was? Did you know that eternal life begins the moment that you accept Christ? It happens to continue beyond the grave, but it begins the moment that you decide to follow Jesus. The truth is, in the UK, millions of people and thousands in this city do not know where they would be going if faced with imminent destruction. And the main reason is that they've misunderstood God. They've rejected God, but they've rejected a wrong impression of God. They have not rejected the God of the Bible. They've rejected a warped, distorted God. And therefore, there is a role for the church, there is a role for you and I to spend time with our friends, seeing, do you realise this is what God is like? This is what he's like. He's not like this. This letter to 1 Peter, from which we get the context of apologetics, is written not just to a group of academic specialists or a group of boffins that like to sit in lecture theatres talking about philosophy and things. It is written to a church, and it's actually written to a number of churches because the believers had been scattered across Asia Minor because of persecution. This was written to everybody. And this need to take time to give reasons why we believe what we believe applies to everybody. Whether you are on the bus, in a cafe, or at the school gate, or in the office at work, or at home talking to your family, apologetics, giving reasons, is for everyone. And what we would love to do is come back in May with some friends who are particularly trained in answering these difficult questions, to help you, to work together. Christians need to work together to do this because it's not easy, is it? It's awkward sometimes. But we want to work together and help you help answer some of these difficult questions that your friends are facing. And we want to do that under the theme of Come Dine With Me. And we've chosen Come Dine With Me firstly because people love dinner parties. It's a really natural way to welcome people. It's also really culturally relevant, you know, that our country seems to love these kind of celebrity come dine with me and all these different connotations of it. It also communicates something incredibly valuable about God, that he is a God. There's a verse in the end of the Bible, Revelation 3:20, that says, Jesus says this, "Here I am, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with him or her, and they with me." This incredibly intimate picture of a God who longs to sit down and talk to us. How was your day? How are you doing? God cares. God cares. And we want to use that as a springboard to have dinner parties and gatherings around food and different events to try and make it as easy as possible for us to help answer some of the difficult questions that our friends are facing. The whole concept of home comes from God. He would love to use our homes. People think in order to tell people about God, we need to be somewhere religious. No. The whole concept of home comes from the God who has created a home for us, and he waits to welcome us there at the end of all things. But in the meantime, he would love to use our homes as a platform for us to share what we know about God and what we ourselves have. So that is what we would love to do. There are many, many other things that I could say, but I just wanted to leave that with you. There are lots of ideas that we have. We're happy to help with the catering side. If you want, we have someone on the team who is a chocolate expert and would, you know, this big chocolate fountain, have a big theme around chocolate. We have others who love sport and would love to do a barbecue and maybe have someone share a 5-minute talk on the theme of sport. We have people in business that could be really effective in reaching business people. We have someone who loves writing poetry, creative writing and stories, who would love to help host a poetry evening where actually we talk about God through the poetry. We have someone who is a fantastic photographer who would love to give kind of photography-themed meeting or evening. And we also have someone who loves swing dancing, which we weren't sure what it was, were we? But we think it's a bit like the Rock or that sort of thing. I'm sure you guys know what swing dancing is. We would love to do something like that if that works. But or we can do none of those things. And feel free to, you know, tell us what you think would work. But we're happy to either help practically and or send in somebody who is willing to share 5 minutes of their experience of dining with God, whether it was the moment they first decided to dine with him or whether it was a significant point later on where they came back to the table after a time away. So we would love to do that. We're going to send you a little pamphlet with some of these ideas that I've mentioned in about 2 or 3 weeks' time. Please do have a look at it. There'll be a tear-off slip. Write down if there's something resonates with you that you've seen on there, that you can see yourself doing and inviting, let us know. If you have something completely different in mind, please do write that on as well. We would love to work with you to help answer some of the difficult questions that our friends have. Thank you.